Good afternoon. Welcome to Cruiser and Crew on WVOK 590. Cruiser's off again today. My name is Ron Vissing, along with my co-host Dan Rose. We'll be taking you through till 6 o'clock. Quick programming note, if you missed Attorney General Jeff Sessions last hour, he'll be back on with us around 4:30, 4:45, so make sure you tune in again then. You know, Dan, one of the things that the Pennsylvania special election taught me was that maintaining our voter registration rolls is crucial. You saw there a 230,000 vote election determined by 500 votes. But here in Kentucky, we probably have the worst maintained voter registration rolls in the country. In fact, it's so bad that Judicial Watch had to file a lawsuit based on some of the irregularities they found. And on the phone with us is Senior Attorney Robert Popper with Judicial Watch. Mr. Popper,
hello.
Thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be on your show.
Hey, first question is, what were some of the irregularities that you found in Kentucky that caused you to take action?
Well, one of the things that you're always looking for, your viewers should know, there's a federal law that requires states to clean their voter rolls. It requires them to check to see if voters have moved to another state or if voters have died, and, you know, in both cases, obviously no longer eligible to vote in Kentucky or whichever state it is. And that's called the National Voter Registration Act, and I may slip into lawyerese and call it the NVRA. Well, one thing you look for when you're trying to enforce the NVRA is whether a particular jurisdiction has more voter registrations than there are citizens over the age of 18. Now, obviously, the most voters you can have in any jurisdiction is the number of citizens over the age of 18. Those are the only ones who are lawfully entitled to register and vote in federal elections. And so when you have more registered voters than that, that indicates a problem. Now, we found that in Kentucky, the voter rolls were in the worst shape, if that's your measuring tool, the worst shape in the country. We found 48 Kentucky counties out of 120 where the number of registrations was higher than the number of citizens over the age of 18, which meant, in effect, in a word, they had registration rates of greater than 100%. 48 counties that way, and we found that the entire state as a whole has more voter registrations than there are citizens over the age of 18. You know, and that's, to call it a red flag doesn't quite do it justice. That is, one of the worst records of any state in the country.
Thanks for that summary, Mr. Popper. This is Dan Rose, Ron's co-host today. Just to, by way of background and to sort of bring our listeners up to speed, Judicial Watch actually filed a lawsuit in the last few months against Secretary of State Allison Grimes for her alleged violations of the NRVA. Mr. Popper, could you sort of recount for our listeners the basis of that lawsuit and what you're trying to get accomplished with that lawsuit, and also what's the status of that lawsuit?
Well, sure. That was based on basically the statistics I just gave you. And, based on some other irregularities, the state of Kentucky does not seem to have any voters on the inactive list. Now, if you're, a voting rights specialist dealing with the NVRA, the inactive list is when a piece of mail asking for address confirmation is sent to the voter and the voter doesn't answer. You put them in an inactive registration status. And if after a certain period of time they don't show up to vote, and that period of time is measured in years, they can be removed from the voter rolls. Well, Kentucky has no one, not anyone, in an inactive status. That, combined with the fact that they have so many registrations, more than they have possible eligible voters, shows that there's a problem. We pointed this out. We filed a lawsuit for noncompliance with the federal NVRA, and we also pointed out that we asked, before this lawsuit started, we asked for documents. Now, the NVRA allows private parties like Judicial Watch to make demands to see documents relating to cleaning the voter rolls. And we did so. And we were told initially, well, we can't have them to you yet, but we'll get them to you soon. And then we received a second letter saying, well, we don't quite have them yet either, but we'll get them to you soon. And then we never heard from them again. And so really, you know, the lawsuit, it's primarily intended to force Kentucky's officials to clean up the voter rolls, as they're required to do. And it's also to obtain documents that they have to maintain and have to make available to people who request them concerning what it is they're doing. You know, and so the status is the lawsuit has been filed. We're commencing what's called discovery, which is when you get the documents you're entitled to in a lawsuit. And you cannot ignore your discovery obligations the way, for example, you can ignore just a letter. And, you know, it's a much more serious process in which documents are and information is provided. And information so far has been provided. And we're trying to piece together an accurate picture of how Kentucky takes care of its voter rolls.
Did the Secretary of State Grimes, did she file anything in her answer to the complaint that surprised you or responded to any of your substantive allegations?
No, nothing in particular. I mean, the answer to a complaint does not have to be particularly detailed. But no, there wasn't anything that was a great surprise. I mean, there were denials and liability, you know, for what it's worth. And for the record, liability has been denied by the state. But we think this is not only a good case, you know, from the point of view of Judicial Watch as a private plaintiff, this is a great case. I mean, the indications that things are simply not being done that are supposed to be done are so great that we really have great confidence in this case. And, you know, we expect if it goes to the court, if it goes, you know, discovery ends and we actually go to trial, that we would win. And that being said, we're always open. I'm always open to settle a lawsuit and, you know, just make an agreement to do the things that should have been done and that should be being done. So that's all in the future. Right now we're at the very beginning of the discovery period.
Has the court set a scheduling order or timeline for the completion of discovery and the process of the case? Are there any deadlines established yet?
There have been, but, you know, the trial, if any, will take place early next year.
Okay.
And prior to that, there are motion deadlines, mm-hmm. there are deadlines for the exchange of expert reports and, you know, a lot of things that probably only a lawyer could love. But, sure. You know, one of the things that we do hope to do, and I mentioned expert reports, is to get expert demographers to talk about what registration would look like if Kentucky were taking care of its voter rolls properly,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, what the population is and how many citizens you can expect and just issues like that. And, you know, I hope that we don't get all the way to trial. I hope that we can fix things before then. But if we do get to trial, I have great confidence in how it will come out.
Well, the relief that you would be seeking either via a settlement or a trial, would it be for an order or an agreement by which Grimes would go through a process to clean the voter rolls? Is that ultimately the relief that you're seeking here?
Yes. We would be asking for a court-ordered consent decree or judgment in which the court, the judge, directs the state of Kentucky, the Secretary of State, the State Board of Elections, directs them to take certain steps. And it, you know, I've drafted these settlement agreements before. I know what they look like, and basically the idea is to establish a set group of requirements that mirror what should be being done under the NVRA and to require monitoring and reporting of progress and to require that this progress be reported to the court and to Judicial Watch. And, you know, by following these steps over a period of time, the imbalance in the voter roll should be correct.
This is Dan Rose here with my co-host Ron Vissing. We're sitting in for Cruiser today. Thank you for joining us. It's a lovely day in Lexington. If you'd like to join the program, please feel free to call 253-5959. You can hit star 590 on an AT&T phone or call toll-free 1-877-777-0590. You also can text us at 253-5959. Before the break, we were talking about the pending lawsuit in federal court here in Lexington that was brought by Judicial Watch against Secretary of State Allison Grimes to try to clean up our voter rolls. Joining us on the program is Bob Popper. Bob is an attorney with Judicial Watch in D.C. and is in charge of Judicial Watch's election integrity section, I guess is how I would term it. Bob, a couple of other things I wanted to get into with you, if you could comment on, is the issue of how easy it is for people to illegally register to vote. It seems that, to me at least, that is one of the biggest gaps in the system in terms of maintaining voter integrity because of the manner in which people can register to vote really without proving their citizenship. And I wondered if what Judicial Watch thinks of that, if there's any effort at Judicial Watch underway to try to have some federal legislation enacted to require proof of citizenship for registering to vote. I know there's been some states that have undertaken some litigation to impose that requirement. Could you bring our listeners up to speed on what Judicial Watch's position is on that and what's going on out there currently in that regard?
Well, what's going on is that's a huge issue. I mean, there have been lawsuits in which the point of the lawsuit was to prevent states from requiring proof of citizenship before people use the federal form to sign up and register to vote. And, you know, the state of play so far is that it appears that the federal form trumps or is greater than even a state law saying that you have to show citizenship in order to vote. And the impetus for these lawsuits commenced under the Obama administration. And, you know, some of the, I hate to guess at people's motivations, but it is hard to understand what exactly would be wrong with requiring proof of citizenship in order to register to vote. Everyone who looks at voter fraud agrees that registration fraud is more common than in-person voting fraud, for example, and, you know, other kinds of voting fraud, like double voting. There's several varieties of voter fraud, but registration fraud is definitely one to worry about, you know, particularly where the requirements for establishing that you're eligible to vote are low. This is an ongoing issue in this country. I do think that legislation at the federal level could be helpful. But, you know, we at Judicial Watch are doing what we can. You know, that too, so far involves taking states to task and suing them if we don't believe they're complying with federal law, and certainly allowing invalid registrations to be submitted would, we maintain, violate the same NVRA that we're suing Kentucky over.
You would think so. I mean, I know recently I saw where I believe it was California. Of course, they just basically ignore federal law in various levels. But did I not see where they are going to start issuing driver's licenses just to illegal aliens and then basically automatically registering them to vote in connection with the issuance of the license? Is there any basis on any kind of a lawsuit against California? And I think Illinois is another bad actor in that regard. You guys got anything you're trying to tee up against either of those states?
Well, we're looking at it. I mean, if we did have something we were teeing up, I probably wouldn't announce it on the radio. But
we want to make some news
looking
here.
At it. You know, we would love to do something. The way those laws operate is you're automatically registered to vote unless you indicate that you're a non-citizen, so it's sort of a voluntary process, or you opt out, which is you say that, you know, I don't want to be registered to vote. And what we're trying to understand and what we're researching is the extent to which there are protections in place, and certainly those states say there are protections in place, although they tend to be a little bit short on the details, but we're trying to understand the details of what the protections are that prevent someone who is ineligible to register to vote from being automatically registered, or from making it very easy for someone like that to register if, for example, they wanted to break the law. You know, and also just the other thing, of course, you're always looking for is invalid registrations that just come about through accidents. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not any better in terms of the integrity of the election. If people are registered to vote and perhaps didn't intend to, but then they get a voter registration card, you know, what they imagine they're entitled to do may be different than what the law actually entitles them to do. So we're very interested in that kind of law and in seeing what the protections are to make sure that the voter registration rolls remain accurate.
Welcome back. You've been listening to News Talk 590 WVLK. We've been talking for the last half hour with Robert Popper from Judicial Watch about the abysmal state of Kentucky's voter registration rolls. And, Mr. Popper, we've got a caller on the line that has a question. Randy, you're up next.
Thank you. Hello, fellas. I want to ask you about the illegal voting, and it's something I've been very concerned about for many years. And to me, this Russian thing is nothing compared to the subversion that's going to happen and is happening with the illegals on the voting rolls. And I would really appreciate you guys. I'm thankful for you all for what you're doing. And I'd like to see how you're funded, and if there's give out an address if you need contributions. I'd be glad to contribute to this because this is a total subversion of my vote.
You're exactly right. Bob, why don't you give us our listeners a little more info, specific info about Judicial Watch and how they can get to you.
Sure. I mean, we have a website. If you do a search on Judicial Watch, you'll get to our website. And we have a broad contributor base, and sir, we would be happy to have you on board. Really, anything you could contribute. But, I'll just tell you that non-citizens voting is one of the issues that I think the Presidential Commission was initially developed in order to try to get information about. And it did not really succeed in that regard. It has been very hard to get a hold of solid information about non-citizens voting. We know that non-citizens routinely remove themselves from the rolls when they were accidentally registered or when they registered by accident. We know that in a number of counties you have, 100 non-citizens identified here, 1,000 non-citizens identified there in terms of just being registered. We know that some of these non-citizens cast votes, but just in terms of the nationwide picture, it's a very hard thing to get a hold of, but we're starting to do so. In recent years, a professor at Old Dominion University went to a website which had something like 80,000 pieces of data. That's 80,000 individuals who had reported data to this website. And unlike most polls, these people were asked if they were non-citizens. Typically, when someone is polled on the street, who are you going to vote for in Kentucky, they first ask if they're a citizen. If they're not, they don't interview them. But this website kept track of who was a citizen and what. It went through a series of questions, and some of these questions were, are you registered to vote and do you vote? Well, they found about 800 non-citizens, and of those, 14% said they were registered to vote. And of those, or rather of the total of 800, 2.4%, I believe it was, 2% plus, said they voted in 2010. And 6%, if I'm remembering my numbers, said they voted in 2008. Now, I've since spoken to the author of that study. That there's a lot of people who will say that the sample size was too small or that people filled out that answer in error. With respect to filling out, the answer that I'm a non-citizen in error, he told me that 80% of the people who said they were a non-citizen in one two-year period said the same thing 2 years later. So that just doesn't seem like an error. In terms of the sample size, we do need more information. And it's hard to generalize from, an answer base of 800 to the entire nation. However, if it's remotely accurate, if there's any way to generalize to the hundreds of thousands, what am I saying, the millions of non-citizens who are in the United States, legally and illegally, then there is a huge potential for interference in U.S. elections. We don't know what that is. You know, we don't know how big the number is. But the suggestions are there that it could be a huge problem. And this is something we need more information about, not less. You know, and I would point out, for example, that there's a database, a systematic alien verification for entitlements database, that, you know, measures who is entitled to receive federal benefits. And one of the things that it looks at is who's a citizen. And the Obama administration had to be sued to share this information with the state of Florida. I mean, you know, we need more information, and the last thing we need is withholding information. So, you know, there's a lot to be done in this regard, and there are a lot of stories that need to be told about this. And I think that to date, the mainstream media's approach has been to look away from it, and that's wrong. It is something that needs to be understood. And the extent of the, you know, non-citizens voting, either accidentally or intentionally, needs to be understood.
That's actually one of the reasons we wanted to bring you on today, because the local media in Kentucky has not covered this to one whit. There's been no articles in any of the local newspapers. There's been nothing on any of the local news channels. And we need to bring this to the state of Kentucky's attention.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is – there are a number of – issues concerning voting and integrity of elections that need to be brought to people's attention. I mean, there are maybe 3,000 counties in the United States. We found 400 where there were more registrations than citizens over the age of 18. Okay, double voting is a big problem. It is lightly penalized. It is, you know, not regularly tracked. It is probably a bigger problem than in-person voter fraud. You know, someone lives in one place, goes to another place, and then casts a vote in the first place on election day, as well as where they reside. You know, there's that kind of fraud. There's registration, absentee voting, ballot mail-in fraud. You know, there are mistakes as well as fraud. There are just, you know, accidents. We need to understand the extent to which voter lists are segregated between, non-citizens who obtain driver's licenses are segregated from the legitimate voter list. I mean, there are a lot of things we need to learn. And, you know, step one might simply be dropping this resistance to learning, to obtaining this information, to finding out what's out there, and dropping the overheated and, frankly, sometimes irresponsible rhetoric about, you know, this is all an effort to suppress the vote.
Suppression.
This is all, some attempt to prevent people who are entitled to vote from voting. No, it is the opposite.
That's exactly right. And what's most disgusting is it seems like the public officials who are charged with keeping the voter rolls clean with integrity are the very people who are trying to prevent them from being scrubbed, in particular Allison Grimes. She's taking no effort to clean the voter rolls. And like you say, when you bring this to the attention of the media or other politicians, they'll respond by saying, well, there's no evidence of any voter fraud or improper registration. You don't really have any evidence of that. But yet when you ask them to look at the information, they won't give it to you. So you're in a catch-22 position where it's out there, you've got to get access to the information, but they won't give you access to the information unless they want evidence first before you can get access to it.
I know. Okay, I mean, the low point was that you had to sue the Obama administration to get this information. It is inconsistent both to say that there's no voter fraud, voting fraud is a myth, and then to refuse to turn over data that could help to show whether that's true.
Exactly.
I know we promised to let you go, but we've got some callers still lined up. Can you take one more call?
Sure.
Mike, you're up next.
Thanks for taking my call, Bob. You were just touching on the subject of my question, voter suppression. What about claims that you hear that voter IDs are very difficult to get for poor people in some areas, and it's impossible, and it's aimed at suppressing those elderly and poor voters?
Well, that's just false. I mean, first, when you look at the actual data, the way that you come up with a high number of people who cannot obtain or probably don't have driver's licenses is by a comparison. I don't want to get too much into the weeds, but there's a way of comparing data from the Department of Motor Vehicles to data from voter registration lists. That doesn't give an accurate picture of, you know, how prevalent ID actually is. You know, another point I'd make is that the ability to obtain some kind of ID is simply not that burdensome. I mean, we have identification
about,
in so many different contexts and in so many different ways. And there's, you know, most laws typically allow someone to provide ID, for example, ID to vote on in person on election day after the fact. You know, you can it's not
really
that you lose your ability to vote forever. And so, you know, I could talk a lot more about that, but that's simply not the case. There are burdens that you as a citizen have to endure to be entitled to vote, and those burdens are not random. They're assigned in order to ensure that elections are honest and that people have faith in them. You know, the loss of that faith is a crushing blow for any nation.
No, agreed. I'm just wondering, are there people stuck in rural areas where they have to drive 200 miles to get to a place where they can be issued a government ID?
Well, you know, I can't speak for the entire country. The idea is to make sure that that's not the case. With sufficient lead time and with, you know, typically people don't have to drive 200 miles in order to obtain a government ID. Typically there's a better way or closer way to do that. And certainly if you go to the Department of Motor Vehicles, you're going to have a photograph taken. And, you know, most people drive. You know, the burdens that do exist, you're always going to have some, unless you are willing to entitle anyone who walks up to a poll to cast a ballot, regardless of, you know, who they are, where they live, how old they are, whether they're a felon. You know, unless you're going to do that, you've got to have rules that govern how people register and vote. And if you do, you know, you may have situations that are unfair. But I would simply add as a final point on this that in my discussions with local registrars and clerks, they will bend over backwards to make sure that someone who is entitled to vote is not accidentally robbed of that opportunity.
Right.
They will make exceptions and take the time to register you to vote.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. Mr. Popper, I sincerely thank you for coming on today. And as we move forward in this process, I hope you'll come back on and update us.
It would be great. Thank you for having me.
Great. Thanks for
nice
your time.
Talking to you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.